Tax Update for Saturday, September 16th, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update for Saturday, September 16th, 2006. This week, we're going to look at the statute of limitations on refund claims. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in the presentation before relying upon any of the positions presented. The podcast and the document accompanying the podcast may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of this document. Such a prohibited use would include using this podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. You can visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This week, we're going to look at issues that arise when taxpayers file claims for refund, when those claims need to be filed, and the impact of a late filing of the original return on the period to file your claim for refund, and including taxpayers who got it wrong largely because they relied upon the advice of an IRS phone representative who gave them a date that turned out to be too late. Now, as we note always, the materials for this podcast are available. If you haven't gone and got those before, haven't noticed them, you can go to the website for the podcast at www.libsyn.com/ezollers, and you should be able to see a link there for this particular podcast for the materials for this particular, and I should say I gave that website wrong, it should be http://ezollers.libsyn.com. I'll get the name right. I've been doing it for a while. But go to that website. You will find the materials for this podcast available for this week and download those, and you can follow along as we discuss in this area, as well as having a printed version of some of the references we're going to give here. This week, we're going to consider the case of Katz and Miller versus United States. This was a 2006 USTC paragraph 50-496 case that involved the Court of Claims. And the Court of Claims and the issue of whether the taxpayers had timely filed their claim for refund, what many of us would normally refer to as an amended return, the 1040X, but obviously it's asking for money back, therefore under the law and under the tax law, we're going to look at this as a claim for refund, whether they had filed their claim for refund in a timely manner. And we discover once again the dangers of relying upon the IRS phone call. In this case, the IRS phone call advice turned out to be wrong. And the fact that even though you may have relied upon that, it's tough luck. And we'll discuss the real rules that underlie when you must file your claim for refund, especially in the case, as was the case for Katz and Miller, when you had filed your original return after the extended due date of the return in question. So we look at that point is, what is your date for filing your claim? Now, the interesting point the Court of Claims makes in this case is that on the IRS advice procedure, the Court of Claims held that you could not extend the statute even if Katz and Miller had been able to show that the IRS employee had intentionally misled them. In essence, had given them the wrong date intentionally, even in that case, the taxpayer could not get an extension of the statute. Now, it's important to note that the court did not go on to find that. In fact, didn't really decide one way or the other whether they had received the advice at all, just said it was an irrelevant issue in the case at hand. Now, you know, we often have to deal with cases of when a statute for limitations is going to expire on a claim for refund. Quite often when we get a new client and we discover problems and issues in prior returns, and the question becomes, you know, is the statute still open? Now, the general rule for the statutes are found in Section 6511 of the Code. And 6511A provides the general rule, which says, in essence, that a claim for refund shall be basically filed within 3 years of the time that the return was filed, or 2 years from the time the tax was paid, whichever expires later. Or if no return was filed by the taxpayer, within 2 years from the time the tax was paid. Now, that would suggest the general rule was, well, let's see, in this particular case, we'll take a look at what happened, but in this case, they filed after their extended due date. And so we were looking at the dates involved. Now, the issue, the 6511A doesn't deal with that issue of the late filed return. It only deals with a case where there was a filed return or one that wasn't filed. However, if the return has been filed, we need to consider a second provision in the rule that has an issue that was involved where we file a return. The return has been filed. The tax was not paid with the return themselves, but was paid prior to the date the return was filed. And there we look at Section 6511B2 Cap A. And that provides a secondary limit where the claim is filed within the three-year period. So this provides that, quote, if the claim filed by the taxpayer was filed during a three-year period prescribed in subsection A, so we filed the return late, but within 3 years after that date of filing, we file our claim for refund, the amount of the creditor refund shall not exceed the portion of the tax paid within the period immediately preceding the filing of the claim equal to 3 years plus the period of any extension of time for filing the return. So what that means is, essentially, we have a second cap on a three-year period. So the three-year period will run, but the three-year period you can only look back basically to the three-year period plus the period of any extension. So we look at the extended due date plus the 3 years, and that's our period to file our claim for refund. Now, as the Katz Court notes, taxes that are withheld or paid with the extension are paid with the initial extension are generally deemed paid on April 15th, the year in question. The Katz Court goes on in quote and says, in Barrel versus United States, which was a 2000 U.S. Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court interpreted IRC section 6513B1 and 2 as requiring the taxes previously collected via withholding or estimated tax payments for a particular tax year are deemed paid on April 15th the following year when the tax return is due, and not at a later date, such as when the return is actually filed or the taxes are actually assessed. So that means if we have the tax return, we have the late filed tax return, we had more than sufficient withheld to pay the tax, and we file our return after April 15th, our taxes are deemed paid on April the 15th, not the later extended date. So the general rule is you must file a claim for refund that's based on the original withholding within 3 years of the original due date, including any extensions that may have been granted. If the claim is filed after that date, the amount of the refund would be time barred, even though the return itself was filed within 3 years of filing the return in question. If we, in fact, made our claim within 3 years, we're within the first three-year period, but we're outside the second limiting period that we find at B2 Cap A. Now, we'll go on to the actual Katz case now. In this case, the taxpayers originally filed an extension of time to file their 1999 income tax return, which would make their extended due date August 17th of 2000. In the year 2000, August 15th fell on a Saturday. However, they missed that deadline and finally ended up filing the return on October 30th, after the extended date they had and even after what they could have gotten for a second extension. The entire tax liability for 2000 was covered by their withholdings, an application of overpayment from the prior year, and amount they paid with their request for an extension. So key factor we have here is that all taxes were in and paid as of April the 15th. In July of 2003, they discovered they might be eligible to file a claim for refund of the taxes they paid on their 2000 return. Now, they were apparently kind of aware that there was a time limit here, so they were going to check and see what that limit should be. So they called the IRS helpline and asked the employee that answered the phone what the deadline was for filing their claim. Now, they claim they were told by the IRS employee that their claim had to be filed by December 18th of 2003. Not sure exactly how the IRS arrived at that date. I would presume it had something to do with when they actually processed the Katz's original 2000 return. So the Katz's went on. This was July. They took a little bit of time, got their claim together all right and correct, and the IRS received their claim for refund on October 17th of 2003. The IRS subsequently, at the end of October of 2003, denied the claim, indicating that it had been filed too late and they were LAP after the statute. Now, the taxpayers are saying, wait a minute, we called in July of 2003, and in July of 2003 we were told we had till December to get this filed. And had we been told we had a much shorter period, we could have gotten it filed virtually immediately. So we think that the IRS, because of the erroneous advice is the only reason that we filed late, that we should still be able to get our claim paid. Now, the Court of Claims decided that regardless of whether the taxpayer had or had not received that erroneous advice, and the court never really worries about whether they did or didn't, just assume they did, 6511 does not allow for an extension of the statute. The court points out this would include even if the IRS had intentionally given misleading advice, that they could not grant equitable tolling of the statute. Now, in this case, they looked at the case of the Irwin case, and they noticed that the claim that the taxpayers were making, that based on the Irwin case, which adopted a more general rule for tolling of the statute, that they should be able to get an extension of statute. Now, Irwin is a more general purpose federal government statute that goes across for, not statute, but case, it goes across all federal statutes. The court notes that the plaintiff's claim for equitable relief relies upon Irwin versus the Department of Veterans Affairs, a 1991 U.S. Supreme Court case. In the Irwin case, the court took an opportunity to adopt a more general rule to govern the applicability of equitable tolling suits against the government. Supreme Court held that the same rebuttable presumption of equity tolling applicable rights to suits against private defendants should also apply to suits against the United States. But the Court of Claims in italics goes on to note the statement in the opinion that says Congress, of course, may provide otherwise if it wishes to do so. The Supreme Court explained that federal courts have typically extended equitable relief only sparingly and recognized two circumstances which tolling is allowed. Where the claimant has actively pursued his judicial remedies by filing a defective pleading during the statutory period, or where the complainant has been induced or tricked by his adversary's misconduct into allowing the filing deadline to pass. And the Katz taxpayers were arguing that under Irwin, they were a victim of the second issue, that in fact they had filed their claim late because they'd been induced to do so by the IRS. The Court of Claims says that's all fine and good, and we deal with that later, but they noted the highlighted portion that they italicized in their opinion. That is, that Congress can override Irwin by statute if it chooses to do so. The Court of Claims says the proper case to look at this is a later Supreme Court case in 1997 of United States versus Brockamp, where the Supreme Court dealt with a case of equitable estoppel in Section 6511. And the Supreme Court found in the Brockamp case that 6511 had no equitable estoppel provision. In Brockamp, the taxpayers basically had sought to obtain equitable estoppel based on the mental disability of the taxpayer. Now, you may recall that after that case, because of all the publicity, that Congress adopted a specific provision, 6511H, that allowed for the tolling of the statute in cases that were equivalent to Brockamp, so essentially reversed the Brockamp decision. In this case, the taxpayers, in this case Katz and Miller, were arguing that, well, the fact that Congress went back and fixed 6511 after the Supreme Court's decision and they, you know, basically reversed Brockamp indicates that, in fact, you know, we should have equitable tolling. The Court of Claims didn't view it that way because they looked at how Congress had chosen to modify 6511. And to the way they viewed it, this made things worse because Congress didn't draft a broad exception that said equitable tolling applies to 6511 and that gave general sets of, you know, that said it would apply in general. Rather, they adopted a provision that very narrowly allowed tolling of the statute under a specific set of conditions. So that in fact you didn't have equitable tolling of the statute, but instead you simply had a statutory provision that extended the statute. And so the court views as such, this upholds what the Supreme Court's view that Congress generally did not mean for equitable relief to provide for this provision. If they had, they wouldn't have made 6511H, which gave a very narrow exception. They would have provided a much broader one. And finally, the court knocked down their Hail Mary pass of saying, well, this case should be distinguished because it was equitable estoppel rather than equitable tolling, meaning that, well, I relied on the representation of the IRS and I'm not looking for a tolling of the statute, but rather that the IRS, you know, made a promise of sorts against me. And the court goes on to note that the plaintiffs attempt to distinguish Brockamp by arguing the decision involved equitable tolling, whereas they're raising an issue of equitable estoppel. But the plaintiffs are asking this court to equitably stop the government from asserting a statute of limitations defense. Regardless of limitation of the label they place on the request, it amounts to equitably tolling a statute of limitations. The court goes on to note that the Federal Circuit has already definitively addressed this issue in RHI Holdings v. United States, a 1998 case, explaining if there is no implied equitable exception in the statute of limitations, then regardless of the fact presented, there can be no equitable tolling or estoppel. The circuit rejected any distinction between estoppel and tolling, since Irwin described one instance of allowing equitable tolling where the complainant had been induced or tricked by his adversary's misconduct into allowing the filing deadline to pass. So, basically, they said, tough luck, you can't just relabel this. The mere fact you were given the wrong advice by the IRS, even if that advice was intentionally misleading, which, to be honest, it probably wasn't in this case. It was simple, they got the answer wrong, which the phone line does from time to time. But even if they had intentionally gotten the answer wrong to intentionally keep the taxpayers from being able to get their claim for refund, the Court of Claims held the taxpayers had no relief. Now, what do we learn from this case? Well, we learn a couple of things. First, it's a good case and example to show clients about why calling the IRS and getting an answer is not necessarily the best way to approach items. It's also useful for us to remember that. You know, from time to time, we've heard people discuss what the IRS has said in various cases. Remember that the IRS is not bound by most things they say. Unless they are said in a very specific context, the mere fact the IRS said something is nice, but not much help for you. And also note that the IRS did assert this fact in court. So the taxpayers may say, well, they told me this. There's no way they would want to go to court and say that, you know, they had told me X, but the real answer was Y, and so I should be held against me. And it's, well, no, there are a number of cases where they have. This is something that comes up quite often. It's also, though, very useful to look at the actual underlying law and remember this quirk when dealing with claims for refunds with new clients. This provision in the statute of limitations, where we have the 3-year period look back, is one that can be overlooked because a lot of taxpayers, or a lot of advisors, remember when we had the quote clarification of 6511, and now feel like, oh well, we're okay on late filed returns. We're okay, but not really. You have a 3-year statute, but you have to look at 3 years from the extended due date is really your statute in question. And in this case, the taxpayers were late. They were more than 3 years past the extended due date when they filed their claim for refund. It is important if you pick up a new client, you discover an issue, and you discover that it needs to be amended or needs or a claim needs to be filed, that you quickly identify whether the statute has expired. Well, that's probably not as big a problem for you. It's not a good thing for the client, but it's not as big a problem for the advisor because statute's gone, tough luck. The second issue is, though, is a statute about to expire? That's the bigger exposure because now you've got responsibility. You've identified the error, and if you didn't identify that a statute was about to expire, you may have a real problem here with your client dealing with that issue, even though it wasn't your error in question that was brought up. So you need to carefully identify statutes and then make sure that you get things in on time. Or make sure that you tell the client why, I mean, I'm sorry, but the statute expires tomorrow and that claim's just not going to get filed. There's no way to get that to happen. Or you're going to pay an extreme amount of money to me in order to get me to drop everything I'm doing now to go ahead and get your claim put together. So to understand those issues on statutes of limitation. Now, this Monday I'm going to be speaking up in Michigan, as I've noted before, and my travels continue, getting a little wilder here. A week from Monday, I will be in Roanoke, Virginia again for the Virginia Accounting Auditing Conference for this year. And the Wednesday of that week, I will be speaking in Memphis, Tennessee on employee benefit plans. So I'll be around a bit. And again, it's getting a little bit interesting getting these podcasts up and on time, but hopefully we'll still be able to continue to get them out during this period and get things going. So we hope to be talking to you next week. Just as I'm basically at that point probably will be in Roanoke, but hopefully we'll have my podcast up before I go there, about some other new events going on in the tax world. This has been the Tax Update for September 16th of 2006. Reminder, the Tax Update is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. You can go there to look at their subscription offerings for tax advisors. We will again, as I say, be back with you hopefully next week talking about a new tax matter.